Our reading today is a poem called Let It Go. It's written by Dana Falls. She describes herself as a once reluctant meditator, a longtime practitioner of yoga, and she's written 6 books on poetry, and she is on the staff at the Kripalu Center in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let all of it go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. Let go. Let it all go and flow with grace that washes through your days, whether you received it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanation that it seeks, but you move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. Let's join together our voices and bodies in singing hymn number 83, Winds Be Still. So, the mic worked. Yay. This would be a time where if we had a gaggle of children, we would call them forward. But we have one lovely child in the back busily making art, and we won't disturb him. But I want to share with you a story. How many of you like to make art? Draw or sketch or paint? Wow. I've got to let you know I'm a person that draws the same tree now as I drew in third grade, and it's not very good. So, I want to share a little bit about me and something on topic. And so I brought in something to show you. One of the things I'm trying to do is bring some things into my office that make me feel like all of me, that don't segment off my life. So I brought in a few things that some of my children have given me or made me or that remind me of them. My daughter's filing cabinet, she doesn't need it anymore, for instance. So one day, I have four children, now in their 20s and one about to turn 30. One day I got a phone call from one of the teachers. Mrs. Davidson, could you come in after school? Uh-oh, what's he done now, I thought. And usually you think it's something bad. So I get to the school. Mrs. Davidson, I have to show you this. It's wonderful. Wow, something good. And the teacher brought out this picture, which I later had framed. So this was made by one of my children when he was in third grade, so 8 years old. I know, she said, I pulled this out of the trash can. Your child made it. Isn't it beautiful? And I said, why, yes, you should keep it now. Take it home and keep it. We can't let it go into the trash. And so I did take it home. And when I showed it to my child, he's like, I put that in the trash. I don't like it. Look, I mean, there are no mountains like that in Antarctica. You know, he had his reasons. And I kept it. And I've often wondered, because now I've kept it 22 years, was that the right thing to do? What does it do for a child to have something he's not proud of held on to and lifted up by a parent? And I got to wondering, well, why might I have trouble letting go of this? What of me is in it? Oh, I wish I could have drawn like that in third grade. Oh, I like the colors. Oh, I like remembering this instance and that teacher. And so when I asked this child, who's now an adult, whether I could share this story, he really wasn't too keen on it. So I promised just once, and then I'll let it go, for real. Interestingly enough, we got together yesterday and he bounded in the door. Look, Mom, I made you something. Wow, that's cool. What is it? I made it with my 3D printer. New kinds of art. And he beamed with pride and enthusiasm and told me all about it. And in that moment, I saw that child that I thought of when I looked at this picture, but who was never there when he saw this picture. That child full of enthusiasm and promise for the future. And so I ask you to reflect on the pieces of art you make in the world, the children. What will you keep? What will you let go of? And why? One of the things I'm inviting you to let go of today is an attachment to the way you have traditionally structured your worship services. And I'm also asking myself, to release that same kind of attachment to my personal preferences and theories and things like that. And so we're going to enter now into the quiet contemplative time of the service, and I've grouped together several elements, calling it a time for prayer and meditation. In the Christian tradition, which is my background, prayer elements often can contain words of praise or adoration, and then words of gratitude and thanksgiving, often sometimes of confession or admitting that we've missed the mark, often a petition or asking for something to happen. And the intercession, the time when we pray for the needs of others. The writer Anne Lamott shortens this to a much more colloquial description. Help, thanks, wow. That's probably easier to engage with. So today we're going to begin with responsive reading number 637, which is in the back of your hymnals. We have just passed through the days of awe and celebrated Yom Kippur and the Day of Atonement for those who are of Jewish heritage and faith. So I invite you to take out your hymnals and to respond with the words in italics. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible,
we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause,
we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, for the selfishness which sets us apart and alone,
we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit,
we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For losing sight of our unity, for those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness,
we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again.
I'm going to conclude this part of the service by singing together hymn number 123, Spirit of Life, in a prayerful voice, and I ask you to remain seated. How many of you are familiar with this song? Awesome. You may or may not know that the composer of the song wrote this as a prayer and had no intention of ever calling it a hymn or even having it included in the hymnal. She was, however, convinced to do that and to share her beautiful work.
Thank you.
This congregation, like many others, thrives through the generosity of friends, members, and visitors, resources of time and talents and pennies and mites and treasures. We collect pledges and offerings each Sunday in order to continue the work of Unitarian Universalist values in our lives, in this community, and the larger community. In a moment, the offering baskets will come around to accept your gift. I'm also going to pass around afterwards small baskets that have slips of paper and pencils on which you might make some notes during the sermon or a short ritual we will have at the end of the sermon. In my first service here with you, just 2 weeks ago, we used the occasion of our ingathering and the start of a new congregational year, and Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, to reflect on our dreams for this year. And we thought about what we might create to help fulfill our hopes and dreams for a better world. In our water ceremony, we mingled waters that reflected our various strands of life. And we lifted up prayers and aspirations for the beloved community we wish to be a part of here and now and help create outside these doors in the community. As with any new beginning, we recognize there are things to let go of from the past. We simply can't be in the present moment and the past at the same time, even though our present moments are shaped in part by the past. Joseph Campbell once said, "We must be willing to let go of the life we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us." So we simply can't be in the present moment and that future at the same time. It's up to us to notice and make the best of each present moment. That moment of creative potential and possibility that is here right now and gone in a split nanosecond. That moment when things can change for the better, for the worse, or not. When we set out together on a journey towards that lofty goal of realizing a beloved community, it helps to lighten the load that we carry, and it helps to give careful thought to the things we need to let go of in order to be fully present, fully engaged, and energized and the creative potential of being together in these moments. Sometimes we just need to let go a bit in order to move forward with ease. At times, the path that gets in our way is most visible in physically tangible things, like pieces of art. So many things, and too many things, can overwhelm us with their demands for our attention or the continued investment of our time and energies and more dollars spent in upkeep. It seems that not a week goes by without some article, Facebook post, or friend talking about the real mental health benefits of uncluttering our lives and simplifying things. Acting on that type of well-intended advice out there can be challenging if we have an emotional investment in the object or the memories that we associate with them. I'm thinking not only of this picture, but of that hard-earned purchase of a must-have item with our first paycheck, or souvenirs from a trip, or things that friends and family members have given us over the years. The story that I shared earlier about my child's art was prompted by an article that I saw in this week's The Nation magazine by Mary Townsend called "Throw Your Child's Art Away." Now, like the writer, I appreciate, she says, that there's something beautifully nonchalant and effortlessly engaging in each new creation a child brings home and proudly presents to others. And you'll know, you'll find that. I've witnessed that burst of pride and enthusiasm that both the giver and the recipient can share. However, the writer points out that we need to make peace with the fact that, by and large, most children's art is not really destined for anywhere but the refrigerator and then the trash can. Sad, true. Sometimes we want to hold on to the art to prolong the memory of that pride and the memory of the love and the energy and the promise of that child's future. But while we cling to a thousand moments just like this one, the child has already moved on. Why? Because there's more growing to do, and there's more discoveries to make, and because the output of art is often incomplete. Isn't every child an artist in formation? So they're on to making more and more art, probably into and throughout adulthood. The writer tells us the most important piece to remember is that if it's the act of making the art that's useful and good for children, then let this part of the art live and let its results die. This reminds me of Mr. Rogers saying, "I'm not very good at it, but it feels good to have made something." That writer said, "The point of life isn't to prolong youth, but to have grown up. And this required discarding things along the way and enjoying the appropriate relief." And I know that these days most organizers say to take a photograph of something you want to remember, but don't really want to keep any longer and you're having trouble letting it go. But then I wonder, does that really bring the appropriate relief when you're scanning through all those photos on your iPad? Aren't we still overly attached to it and the memory and the past? In an interesting parallel, I think our Unitarian Universalist liberal faith is one founded on thousands of moments and acts of letting go, most of which did bring some sense of appropriate relief at the time. Starting with our roots in the Protestant Reformation, we let go of a Trinitarian Godhead in favor of a Unitarian one. We let go of the idea of predestination and salvation by election in favor of a universalist theory of salvation which bars none. We've let go of a supersessionist view of Christianity in favor of one that recognizes and honors the the legitimacy and continuation of the Jewish faith and people. We let go of biblical literalism in favor of biblical criticism and metaphorical and mythic understandings of the text. We've let go of a clergy-defined, top-down creed in favor of the people's free, responsible search for truth and meaning, which is at the heart of our faith. And we've let go of the idea that we once held the only truth in favor of a religious toleration, one that acknowledges multiple faith traditions and sources of wisdom, including polytheistic pagan and indigenous traditions, and religious humanist and atheist thought. We let go of a creedal test in favor of establishing covenantal ties that bind us and call us back into beloved community when we break covenant and go astray. Today, we continue to let go bit by bit as we try to let go of the limitations of our Western European cultural roots and embrace anti-racist, anti-oppressive, and multicultural understandings and experiences. So the way I see it as Unitarian Universalists, we have been constantly in the process of letting go of limiting beliefs and practices in favor of adopting and living into life-enhancing, inclusive ones. We've let go of the end product, the thing, the statement, in favor of the process of making the art of religious and spiritual, but not religious, life together. For sure, we have our so-called pieces of art to show. We have words and hymns and chalices and liturgies, practices and traditions. We've got slogans, we've got t-shirts, we've got graphics, and maybe you even have some representations of those things on your own refrigerators. But let us be mindful that the output of our collective art is often incomplete as well, and that we too are immersed in an ongoing creative act. We deconstruct and we allow something to decompose or die off or dissolve, much like the leaves falling down outside. And we pick up the building blocks that remain to create new forms and structures for growth and vitality. And mostly we are engaged in this type of a flow of ongoing creativity here in our own congregations. From what I have seen and come to know of Fourth UU in my brief almost 2 months with you, it's that this is a place where many of you have found a tradition and place that embraces open-mindedness and diversity in a safe and thoughtful environment. Here is where you have built and have continued to maintain over the past 60 years a community that provides a sense of belonging, welcome, friendship, and extended family. This is where you have cultivated a level of trust in which companionship, support through difficult times, and even love can flourish. Having arrived here to serve your congregation and its rich history of lay-led and shared ministry, letting go is something I've been thinking of a lot. You have already said goodbye to Reverend Karen in June, letting her go only 3 short months ago. And now you've got me, a contract minister in formation, for better or at least not too much worse. And I have to remind you there's a clause in there where you can dismiss me after all, should you choose to do so. But I do want to say that if you have expectations that I'll be just like your previous minister, I hope you can practice letting go of those. At the same time, I'll practice letting go of the idea that stepping into Reverend Karen's shoes and following her footsteps is my best course of action. That's really impossible, isn't it? Reverend Karen and I are different people. Our training She was a small congregation specialist for years before she came here. You are my first experience with a small congregation, so I am your minister in training on that one. And besides, I bet we wear different sized shoes. But the bigger question really is, how will we, you and I, companion each other in this new chapter of shared ministry at 4th UU? We do face some significant challenges, for sure. There is a general societal decline in religiosity, a decreased number of children and families joining houses of worship, and a significant and remarkable rise in numbers of people who describe themselves as spiritually unaffiliated, especially spiritual but not religious. These things make attracting new members and growing a church very challenging. And while it's tempting to try to recreate what worked in the past, the present is not the past, and things have changed. And so we will need to discern our way forward together. And thinking about that discernment, it seemed to me that many concepts and tools I've been experimenting with in my own process of ministerial discernment and working with spiritual directors can be valuable ones to consider in this larger context. For instance, we would be wise to always keep in mind a multifaceted approach to whatever we do that honors the complexity of our human experience. And by that, I mean listening to our minds, our hearts, and our guts, trying to bring them into alignment when we clarify what we want and as we face decisions large and small. Like most Unitarian Universalists, we do tend to get stuck in our minds, collecting important information and data, weighing options carefully, considering the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats ad nauseum, on and on. But we must also stay attuned to what our hearts long for in our coming together for fellowship and action. And we need to allow our hearts equal time at the table to affirm our desires as a community and be open and receptive to help in all guises. Now, our intuition, too, plays an important role because our bodies, frankly, don't lie. If a decision doesn't feel right for us in our guts, it probably isn't. We would also do well to consider how elements from the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola, a 16th century Jesuit theologian, might guide our discernment. If you have a Catholic background, you might be familiar with those. I wasn't, so it's all new to me. But among the elements that he suggests are embracing an attitude of spiritual interior freedom, in which we strive to be free of personal preferences and attachments and preconceived notions of what the answers or results of our discernment should or might be. Another is to embrace an attitude of holy indifference, in which we are indifferent and maybe even surprised now and then at the outcome of the discernment process, so long as it honors what is deepest and truest in sustaining the life and mission, in this instance, of this congregation. I suspect there will also be times when we come to the realization that we do not have the amount of control over life and circumstances that we thought or wished we had to shape the future we envision. And so I wonder, can we surrender in those moments? Can we simply let go of the need to control and of the need to figure it all out right away, right now? Can we let go of the need to produce tangible works of art and turn our hearts, minds, and bodies to the art of mending and sustaining broken and forgotten relationships? Let go and let God is a phrase that has been popularized by Alcoholics Anonymous And it gets at this idea of surrendering to a higher power. And I know that many you use stumble on this. So I invite you to think of that higher power with other words, what speaks to you, God or spirit of life or creative love or mystery or that which lies beyond. Whatever words you use, what happens if we adopt an attitude of interior freedom and holy indifference? If we let go of our personal preferences, of traditions that don't serve us well, of mindsets that don't serve the common good or the mission of Voice UU, of assumptions and resentments that hamper our ability to be fully present and move forward with ease. What happens if we release our expectations and open ourselves expectantly to what may come or to come what may? What happens if we let it be? Come, let us practice making art. Let us practice letting go. If you feel so moved, not obligatory, you are invited to write or draw on the small slips of paper that went around something or several somethings you would like to let go of. It could be something that's on your heart or in your conscience whose release might allow you to move ahead in healing and wholeness in some area of your personal life or your professional life or in some area of our congregational life. The paper that's gone around dissolves in water. What you write won't be preserved for posterity's sake. Taking the time to embody and note with something with intention, in the presence of others who hold you in loving kindness, can be a moving experience for some people. Not all people, not everything works for all people. The bowl of water will remain after the service, so if you're one of those people who like to reflect and then later come to something privately, you can do that. We'll have a little lovely, soothing background music. That's cute. And I invite you to come forward in silence and drop your paper in the bowl of water over there. Use the wooden spoon to give it a gentle stir, and you will be able to see it dissolve. When everyone who would like to have participated, then we'll segue into our next hymn, which is in your order of service. Thank you. Let us rise in body and spirit and conclude this part with hymn number 151, I Wish I Knew How. As we open each service with a chalice lighting, we close with an extinguishing of the chalice. Many of you may know this most popular Unitarian Universalist chalice extinguishing reading words. We extinguish the flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. I'll learn the words for the song, and we'll all learn these words, so we don't have to read them next time. In closing, take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Go in peace.